Hello, this is Bob Kruger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour I'll be reading to you from Thought for Food for May 2010. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. During the month of May, we'll observe a number of holidays. We'll celebrate Mother's Day on the 9th, Armed Forces Day on the 15th, and Memorial Day on the 31st. It's a bit ironic that with our artificial three-day weekends, we'll observe Memorial Day on the day that was originally observed, the 31st. Another item we can enjoy during May are North Carolina-grown strawberries. And let me share with you an article written by Debbie Wetchler, who has been the Executive Secretary of the North Carolina Strawberry Association since 1977, and it begins, "By late this month, which was April, North Carolina strawberry crop will be in full swing across the state. Interested in buying local? Want food that's freshest, nutritious, fun, and delicious? Here's your chance. As the berries ripen, farmers have been busy cleaning out their roadside stands, getting ready to open their fields to pick your own customers and start putting up their signs so they can let the public know it's time. Come pick strawberries. Buy some fresh picked fruit at our stand. Almost all of North Carolina strawberry growers sell directly to the public through Pick Your Own at roadside stands, both on-farm and off-farm, and at farmers' markets. North Carolina is the fourth largest producer of strawberries in the United States, while the top two states, Florida and California, produce mostly for the shipping market, and number three, Oregon, grows for processing. North Carolina strawberry growers grow to sell to North Carolina consumers. Farm income from strawberries in 2008 was $20.8 million, and that's money that stays in the local economy. However, connecting strawberry growers and eaters remains a challenge. Strawberries are an ephemeral crop, and while the taste of fresh berries may be as eagerly anticipated as Beolus Novu, those berries won't sit on the shelf for a few months like a bottle of wine. In a good year, berries are available for 8 to 10 weeks. In other years, those times when the weather turns summer hot in early May, it may be only 4 to 6 weeks. Always May is the peak month. Northerners who move to North Carolina who think of strawberries as a June or July crop are often startled to discover they've missed the season entirely. It can take a little effort to get out to a farm or a market to pick up or buy strawberries, but the flavor and nutritional values of berries picked just that day make it well worth it. And all children should have the experience of picking strawberries, eating them warm off the plant, coming home juice-stained and satisfied. North Carolina strawberries do also show up in local supermarkets, but most consumers, used to a year-round supply, hardly notice. Some think that all the strawberries they buy in the spring are local, little realizing that California harvest coincides with the local one and dominates the stores. If consumers read the labels, choose local berries, and ask them if you don't see them, they should encourage more stores to buy locally. North Carolina is David to California's Goliath, and our berries are fresher. Buying locally produced foods has been a growing trend these last few years. According to a 2007 study, 70% of consumers want to know where their food comes from and would pay more for local food if they can find it. Overall, local food in the United States is estimated to be a $5 billion industry with expected growth to reach $7 billion in 2011. In North Carolina, the number of farms selling direct to consumers has increased by more than 20% since 2002 for a total value in direct sales of over $29 million. The United States Department of Agriculture recently started a program called Know Your Food, Know Your Farmer, recognizing that this trend is a partnership of both farmers and consumers. North Carolina strawberry growers and other direct market farmers are doing their best to let consumers know that they're here and that the season is now. I plan to do some berry picking this month. Here are some tips for we who want to pick our own. Always call before you go. Nature is fickle, and different conditions can slow or speed up ripening. Children are welcome, but don't let them trample rows, climb on machinery, or wander away unsupervised. Pets are not welcome. Yes, we're talking to you who take your dogs everywhere. Aim for mornings or evenings when the farms aren't so crowded and it's not in the heat of the day. Regardless, still wear a hat and sunscreen. And this is your first time for picking, ask for advice. With strawberries, don't pick those with white shoulders or green tips. They'll be ripe for someone who comes after you. Bring containers for your fruit unless the farm specifies that containers are provided. Flat baskets and box are excellent because the fruit won't be piled too high. Pails and buckets are easy to carry. Care for your fruit on the way home. Don't put the fruit in the trunk of your car or leave them sitting in the car if it's warm and sunny. Consider taking an insulated cooler to bring them home in. For a list to pick your own berry farms statewide, contact the North Carolina Department of Agriculture at 919-737-7887. 919-737-7887. So we've arrived home with our strawberries, and what do we do next? This may be determined by what we want to do with the berries. But if you're unable to process the berries at once, refrigerate them. Do not wash berries until you're ready to work them up. Washing and then placing them under refrigeration will promote spoilage. If you plan to freeze some of your berries, consider this. I stem and wash the berries and place them on a cookie sheet and put them into the freezing section of my refrigerator. I do this with whole berries or some split in half. And when they're solidly frozen, place in freezer bags and date. You can then remove as many or as few as you wish to use at any given time. If you wish to make strawberry jam at a later date, just fill a freezer bag with the amount called for in your recipe. Before you freeze your berries, be sure to treat your family to some short strawberry shortcake. Many folks use angel food cake or pound cake to make this delicious dessert. Our friend, Suzanne Havala Hobbs, has provided us some suggestions about the use of strawberries, and she begins, "It's strawberry time, and one of our favorite fruits is turning up in all the usual places. Strawberries not only taste good, they're also good for you. They're a rich source of vitamin C, manganese, and dietary fiber, and a decent source of folate and potassium. That's a part of what makes strawberries so easy to enjoy. So why dilute their goodness? If you use strawberries as a vehicle for artery-clogging cream, fatty cake, pie crust, and added sugar, you neutralize the benefits you could get from the berries. Make strawberries work for you, not against your diet goals. Eat strawberries in a manner that enhances your health. For example, add sliced strawberries and walnut pieces to a spinach salad tossed with poppy seed dressing. Use strawberry halves in a fresh fruit salad made with cantaloupe and pineapple chunks, sliced mango and kiwi, seedless grapes and blueberries. Serve a side of fresh sliced strawberries drizzled with balsamic vinegar on a bed of bib lettuce. Stir sliced strawberries into a bowl of hot oatmeal in the morning. Make a yogurt parfait using granola layered with non-fat vanilla yogurt and fresh strawberry halves. Eat plain fresh strawberries out of your hand. Just so you don't think I'm a strawberry Scrooge, here are some ways to make over and still enjoy some strawberry favorites. Instead of chowing down on strawberries dipped in chocolate, try strawberries dipped in powdered sugar. In place of a big bowl of ice cream or a big wad of whipped cream with your berries, flip it. Eat a big bowl of strawberries with a dollop of ice cream or whipped cream on top. When you make strawberry pie, reduce the amount of sugar and make sure the pie crust is made without lard or solid shortening. Make it trans-fat free. Pound cake and shortcake can be fattening artery cloggers when they're made with solid shortening or butter. Enjoy a small piece with your strawberries, but make it with trans-fat free margarine instead. Or substitute angel food cake, which is much lower in calories and trans-fat than saturated fat. Enjoy strawberries even more this year. As you know, I rate these articles ahead of the broadcast time. With the warm weather of late April and early May, I fear by the time you hear this program, our local strawberry season will be over or almost over. If this proves to be the case, please accept my apologies. On April 30th, the Mecca restaurant in downtown Raleigh celebrated their 80th birthday. To endure for a Mecca-like span of years is next to unthinkable today. The most recent statistics from the Small Business Administration shows that two-thirds of all new companies survive for only 2 years. 44% last for 4 years. Restaurants rank among the riskiest of new ventures. An often-quoted Ohio State University study from 2003 puts the failure rate around 60% in the first 3 years. Much of Mecca's food is still prepared by Paul Dumbalis, the third generation in Raleigh's oldest restaurant. He learned that the Mecca's longevity grows out of 60-hour weeks, a lesson he learned from his grandfather, Nick, who opened the Mecca in 1930 and worked there into his 80s, and his father, John, known as Mr. D to practically everyone in Raleigh. Just being real consistent, he said, explaining the Mecca's long life, you've always got family in there. You can't run it from home. You've got to be there. During the Mecca's long life, it has been and still is a place that has attracted state and local political figures. It's known as a place where people of opposing beliefs can discuss their ideas with others. Can we say that the Mecca furnishes a neutral ground? It's highly unlikely that a restaurant open today will still be open in 2090. Congratulations to the Dumbales family and the Mecca. The first word that comes to mind is Dag Nabbit. The Krispy Kreme restaurant on Person Street in Raleigh is closed for a month. The building is undergoing a major remodel for the first time since it opened in that location in 1971. The original building was built in 1939, a few doors down. Construction workers gutted the landmark restaurant, which makes 10,000 donuts a day for the Raleigh area. The floor was entirely rubble and ductwork dangled from the ceiling, but it still smelled like donuts. Krispy Kreme officials say the store needed a makeover. It's still the original construction, says Steve Weimer, Krispy Kreme's operation officer, who along with Stephen Graves, the vice president of operations, stood among the dust and sparks at the site. It's time to update. But apparently a lot of folks didn't get the word. People have been turning in by the dozens and overcome with shock when they're greeted with the closed sign. Danny Larimore, the foreman from the Thomasville-based Ritchie Construction Company, which is doing the remodeling, said one guy honked, raised his hands, and said, "What am I supposed to do now?" Zayamba Amur Rahmani, who described herself as Krispy Kreme's number one donut lover, was aghast at the store closed with no prior warning. Rahmani, a student at NC State, had been counting on donuts to get her through exams. The yellow tape around the parking lot, the signs inside had removed. "I felt my heart try a little on the inside," she wrote in an email. "I can't wait for it to reopen. I hope it still feels somewhat like the old Krispy Kreme, kind of run down, but just home-like." The new space will have a fresh color scheme, more seating, a bigger viewing window to watch the donuts get made, and a fairly new Krispy Kreme venture called Cool Cream, a type of soft-serve ice cream. You can get Cool Cream mixed with toppings, Cool Cream milkshakes, and a Cool Cream donut sundae, where they take a donut of your choice and balance a scoop of ice cream in the hole. And there'll be a new coffee station, too. For traditionalists, there will still be hot glazed donuts as well as the other donut varieties, such as glazed blueberry or chocolate ice custard filled. As for the famous red neon sign that guides us like the light on Ray Kinsella's Field of Dreams, it's in a storage container, waiting to hang in the new facility. But it won't be turned on for at least another month. Weimer and Graves said construction will take 45 days in all, and workers on the job site from 5 a.m. to 11 p.m. every day to finish on time. Warmer said it would be impossible to miss the reopening, but the company will plan a week-long celebration. Please hurry. Krispy Kreme is not the only remodeling job going on in our community. The Golden Corral restaurant at 6129 Glenwood Avenue in Raleigh closed the last of April. Demolition of the 17-year-old building will begin soon, and a new restaurant was built in its place. This restaurant is the unofficial flagship store for the Raleigh-based buffet chain. Sitting just about a mile from the company's corporate headquarters, it's a popular spot for company executives who are testing out new ideas or simply dropping by for lunch. The Golden Corral remodels his restaurants every 7 years, says Larry Trenery, the senior vice president of company operations. "We're redoing it because the building really had outlived its usefulness," he said. "We know we had to either remodel or redo it. So if we're going to invest money in it, we decided this was the best way to go." The 60 people who work in the restaurant were temporarily working at other Golden Corral locations, he said. When the Glenwood Avenue restaurant reopens in late August, the workers will come back and up to 50 more people will be hired. The new store will be about the same size, will be designed to handle more customers. Hopefully they won't have a serious delay caused by weather. Rebuilding, remodeling, or what? The future of Holt Lake Barbecue and Seafood, the Johnson County Institute, is in question after a fire torched the inside of the restaurant in late April. Terry Barefoot, one owner of the restaurant, said the building was likely a total loss. Fire officials told Barefoot the fire seems to be accidental, caused by a problem with a fluorescent light, he said. The restaurant is closed Sundays, and so the fire burned unnoticed until a Johnson County deputy sheriff drove by at about 7 p.m. This is not the first time this restaurant has been damaged by fire. In 1981, 2 years after opening, the business was burned in what later was ruled arson. Barefoot and his family had operated it in a new building within 2 months, he said. Barefoot wants to rebuild this time, but is unsure of his plans as he has appointments scheduled with insurance agents and is trying to estimate costs and finances. The day after the fire, stacks of blackened cooking equipment and furniture ringed the building as Barefoot nailed wood across the doors and windows. He guessed replacements and repairs could cost $1.5 million. It's a shock. Mr. Barefoot, 55, says he stood out the building the day after the fire. You expect one of something like this in a lifetime, but the same time twice is hard to deal with. In the decades between the blazes, Barefoot and his family built an army of regular customers. Employees and customers alike stuck around for years, and Barefoot's mother, 84, still makes desserts. Whole Lake's tables are stocked with pitchers of sweet tea, no questions asked before customers ever sit down, and veteran waitresses deliver complimentary treats like red velvet cake before the meal. Some Saturdays, the place sold 600 pounds of barbecue. You get sweet tea and dessert and catch up with the community and each other, said Susan Dunn, a waitress for the restaurant for 14 years until 2002. If you want to know anything, you come here and find out. If customers don't know, Terry would. When the restaurant opened in 1979, it faced fewer than a half a dozen local competitors, Barefoot said. In its heyday, it drew big crowds and long lines from around the county, especially a tobacco market nearby. Business fell in recent years as dozens of new restaurants entered the market, but a devoted and aging clientele kept coming week after week, often sitting at the same tables. And Hoke Lake kept a staff of about 30 people. For now, these people are out of a job. We await the Barefoot family's decision to reopen or not. Farmland in western Johnson County has been vanishing in recent years, but Dwight Holcomb wants to bring people back to growing their own food. Mr. Holcomb is starting a food co-op in which families can join in growing the produce. The produce will be sold at a country store on Cleveland Road, but co-op members will take home their share free and will get a cut of the profits. There's nothing, really nothing, in this entire region like what we're going to do, Holcomb said. Community-supported agriculture has taken off in recent years, but with folks signing up to buy a regular share of a local crop's farmers. But Holcomb's plan takes it all a step further, and the nutritionist wants to make skill building a big part of it. The whole focus is on training and creating, he said. Here's how the co-op will work. Families will pay $300 a year to join the co-op, regardless of how many people are in the household. Free membership is available for people with greenhouse and land to contribute to the cause. Membership gives a family as much food as they need under one condition, that everybody, including the kids, pitch in growing the crops and staffing the store. We only insist they do everything possible to contribute, Holcomb said, noting that the co-op will not impose a set number of hours on its membership. Membership will also let folks take classes that Holcomb and his wife Nan will offer in buildings behind their home on Lee Road in Clayton. The subjects range from sustainable agriculture and nutrition to woodworking, sewing, and knitting. Non-members can take classes for $25 a family. Members will take an active role in governing the co-op and will meet regularly. Members may decide on the structure of the co-op, and official sign-ups likely won't take place until May, according to Mr. Holcomb. Crops will be sold at the old cotton gin store, a century-old building on Cleveland Road across from the Broadmoor subdivision. The buildings have been in Nan Holcomb's family for generations, has housed many country stores, families, and a cotton gin. An old Coca-Cola machine is still there, and Dwight Holcomb hopes to refurbish it. Nan Holcomb's late uncle ran a store there and had always hoped to reopen, but he died before he could make it happen. We're hoping to honor him a bit with this, Dwight said. In addition to produce from the co-op, the store will have the merchandise of an old-fashioned country store, from glass bottle sodas to candies. And Holcomb will also sell his line of organics, soaps, and pain relief creams, which he has made and sold for 10 years in his Selma store, Anderson Street Soap and Nutrition Company. Unsold food from the store will go to the needy, and Holcomb wants to improve nutrition for the area's low-income population. "We will never turn down anyone that's in need," he said. Holcomb is busy renovating the store, and he plans to add picnic tables and a deck in hope of making a community gathering place. He expects to recruit potential members and hold organizational meetings this month and open the store on the last weekend of the month. Classes will likely start in May, he said. Holcomb recognizes it's an ambitious program, but it's something he's been planning for 2 years. "All I have is a dream and a vision that's been driving me for years," he said. "I'm sure all of us wishes good fortune in reaching for his dream." One of the staples of southern gardens are yellow squash. Yellow summer squash is a versatile southern vegetable. Until recent years, a prolific squash harvest was easy. Plant the seeds between April 15th and May 15th, wait about 6 weeks for bumper crop. And recently, some gardeners have complained about poor harvests. The problem could be the lack of pollinization. Bees are the primary pollinators of squash and melons. It's possible that the decline in the bee population may contribute to the problems home gardeners are seeing. To help the bees, eliminate insecticides which may harm them after the flower buds appear. Yellow squash comes in straight neck or crook neck varieties. Seneca Prolific, Gold Bar, Lemon Drop L, Mutter Pick, and Super Pick are good straight necks. If you prefer crook necks that usually ripen a week or two before straight necks, try Dixie, Destiny 2, or Prelude 2. You could start before the squash even forms. For something real different, pick some of the blossoms, stuff them with goat cheese, and batter and fry them. I'd like to taste some of those. When considering the mature squash, look for ones that aren't too big or thick skin. Yellow huge squash that are left on the vine too long can be tough and have unpleasant large seeds. Look for ones that feel tender and moist, and be sure they're not bruises or soft spots. Squash has a high water content and is very perishable. Store in plastic bags in the refrigerator for no more than 5 days. It really isn't a southern family reunion until at least one squash casserole arrives on a potluck table. Summers and yellow squash are inseparable, but there's one way more than to this sunny vegetable than the traditional butter and bread crumbs creation. My favorite is fried yellow squash. Until I moved to this part of the country, I'd never seen a yellow squash, and my mother-in-law sliced the squash thinly, breaded them, and fried them. I really like to learn to like them. Other ways to prepare them is grilled or steamed. Not many of us ever think of eating them raw. Select the most tender young squash you can find and slice them very thin and add them to a fresh vegetable salad. Health nuts may soon be turning to peanuts in their search for the fountain of youth. One researcher at North Carolina State's food science program is examining peanut skins in search of the anti-aging chemicals traditionally associated with grapes and red wine. But people fail to realize that peanuts and peanut skins have just as many, if not more, antioxidants as fruits and vegetables, says Juanita Lewis, a doctoral candidate in the Food Scientist Bioprocessing and Nutrition Laboratory at NCSU, which is associated with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Lewis and other university scientists hope to show that peanut skins contain phenolic compounds touted by nutritionists as chemical foundations of youth because of the antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, and anti-aging properties. Many plants naturally produce these compounds for defense when they are under attack by pathogens and herbivores. Recently, animal studies has credited these compounds with an assortment of attributes, including anti-inflammatory properties. They can also lower blood sugar and reduce negative effects of a high-fat diet. Resveratrol, one of the compounds notable in grapes, but also found in peanut skins, has been shown to prolong the life span of some animals. Another compound group in peanuts called flavonoids consist of the same chemicals that provide the health benefits of green tea. So much of what we focus on is the health aspects of the whole nut, said peanut National Peanut Board nutritionist Bonnie Johnson. This research can have a big impact on health trends. Traditionally, peanut skins have been considered a waste product, often ground up and used for animal feed. Research has shown that peanut skins have these compounds, and these compounds decrease the risk of diabetes and heart disease, Lewis said. If we can show this in the lab, we can put more peanut skins in products. But circus tents and ballparks won't be serving up packages of peanut skins just yet. They're good for you, but they're pretty bitter, said Lewis. Next, she plans to test her phenolic findings on cell models and eventually humans. Maybe my findings will help people take a second look at good old goober peas, she said. Good news for we who like Oriental cooking. David Mao, the former chef and co-owner of the Duck and the Dumpling, is returning for a third act in his restaurant career. Mao said he will open a new casual dining restaurant, David's Dumpling and Noodle Bar, on Hillsborough Street in June. He's taking over space at the corner of Oberlin Road in Hillsborough that was recently occupied by Red Hot and Blue. Mao, 66, sold his share of the Duck and the Dumpling to his partner, Greg Hatem, in February, and fully expected to retire after nearly 40 years in the restaurant business. When I retired, I really felt good for a couple of weeks, Mao said, and then after that, I'm kind of bored. He described his latest endeavor as a return of David Mao, Act 3. He came to the United States from Vietnam in 1972, and 4 years later opened the Mandarin House in Cameron Village. In 22, he and Hatem opened the Duck and Dumpling in downtown Raleigh, offering pan-Asian fare that Mao had always wanted to serve. The business was a success, and Mao became known for the restaurant's namesake dumplings. He made the dumpling dough from scratch, and he said his new restaurant will serve Asian fare, but will be more casual and more affordable than the Duck and the Dumplings. Patrons will be able to get a lunch entree and a drink for about $7.59, he said. The restaurant will open for lunch and dinner, with the kitchen closing at 10 p.m. and the noodle bar remaining open until midnight during the week and until 2 a.m. on weekends. I can't wait. My wife and I have enjoyed many times of eating in the Mandarin House, but when they moved downtown, we were, like a lot of older folks, we're a little reluctant to go down there to the Duck and the Dumpling, but it'll be great to see David in his new role, and we look forward to his coming there with great anticipation. It looks like that we're about to run out of time with this episode of Thought for Food. Be sure to listen to the same time next month. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Bob Kruger, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and the content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. And all I can say is that it's been my pleasure to have been with you, and I hope that this has proved interesting, and I hope further that there are still North Carolina strawberries available. I haven't as yet been able to get to a place to pick some, but I'm going to do it momentarily. And so long. You folks take care.